You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Some say money is bad for the soul, bad for the rock, bad for the roll, bad for the heart, bad for the brain, bad for yeah, everything, oh yeah!
Welcome, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As it is the 3 o'clock hour, it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Because it's all on the line, as they say. I am extremely happy to be joined by Kitty Richards. She's a senior strategic advisor at Groundwork Collaborative. She worked at the U.S. Treasury. Pretty smart people work there. She also worked at the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute. She's recently testified just this month before the Senate Banking Economic Subcommittee on the need for reforming our tax code. And all of this is important, again, because we are in the tax fight of a generation, basically. The Trump tax cuts, which benefited the most wealthy people in the United States and the richest corporations, portions of that are set to expire. Portions of it won't expire, but they're still really bad ideas, and we need to do something about that. And we recently on Maggie and the Millionaires heard from Bob Ward. He's the Senior Vice President of Tax Policy at Patriotic Millionaires, because he also testified before that very same U.S. Senate Finance Committee. So let's focus in with Kitty. Thank you so much for making time. I really appreciate it. Not a lot of Republicans even bothered to show up for the Senate hearing, Kitty, which I find deeply disturbing. What were the key points had Republicans showed up to do their jobs and heard your testimony?
You know, what they would have heard is me describing how we can really move toward a tax code that actually works for working people and builds a thriving economy. And that is really, really different from the trickle-down economics of the last 40 years. And it's really different from the approach of the Trump tax giveaways to the wealthy and corporations.
Yeah, it's this term, trickle-down. I chuckle because if trickle-down had worked, we wouldn't see the most unequal wealth that our country has seen since the Gilded Age. I mean, we've exceeded that lack of equity in our country. If trickle-down worked, people wouldn't be feeling the economic pinch that they're feeling today. If trickle-down worked, we would see wages rising at a much greater rate. Instead, we're seeing corporate profit margins rising, right? And the rich getting richer and richer. But when I hear conservatives talking about those Trump tax cuts benefiting his billionaire boys club buddies and the richest, especially multinational corporations, I keep hearing these talking points saying, well, it paid for itself. It boosted the economy. It helped the middle class. That is a bunch of hogwash, isn't it? What does the data say? What's the truth here?
No serious economists think that. And to be honest, no serious economists co-signed the claims that the Trump tax cuts would pay for themselves. And they've been worse than anyone thought. If you think about the economic performance side of the ledger, there were these wild promises of $4,000 in increased wages for the average worker. None of that materialized. The increased investment we were supposed to see didn't materialize. And those claims were silly when they were made. It was not at all surprising that those things didn't pan out. And what we did see was that the Trump tax cuts cost even more than they were projected to at the time. And now they're doubling down and saying, you know, it wasn't far enough to slash the corporate tax rate by 14 percentage points. Let's knock off another 6% just to see if we can throw more good money after bad.
It is truly shocking. I like this phrase, No serious economist thought that it would do any of those things. No serious economist that has looked at it has concluded that it accomplished any of those things. These are not serious plans for middle-class people. It's very unserious, except for the disaster that it portends for working people in this country. Just moments ago, Kitty, you may be also aware, Donald Trump is in Savannah, Georgia, giving a speech doubling down on this tariff plan, which is effectively shows up as a sort of sales tax, again, a consumption tax, if you will, that impacts the middle class and working people far more than it will the investor class, the billionaires and millionaires that Donald Trump structures a tax cut to benefit at a scale that far outstrips any de minimis, tiny little benefit to the middle class. Republicans, again, seem to be focusing on corporate tax rates. They claim this is going to hurt small businesses if we can't slash corporate tax rates another 6%. But they don't seem to talk about the largest, most consistently profitable corporations and what, again, the good money effectively that we're throwing after bad. Well, again, help us get at the truth here. Will the corporate, does the corporate tax rate today harm small businesses? Would increasing it harm small businesses? Well, this is pretty nuanced, is it not?
Most small businesses do not pay the corporate tax. They pay taxes as sole proprietorships, as individuals. You know, you don't go out as an entrepreneur trying to start a restaurant or a dry cleaning business and incorporate as a C corporation right. and start paying the corporate tax. The vast majority of corporate tax revenues actually come from the largest, most powerful corporations, most profitable corporations, except to the extent that they are allowed through both deliberate tax cuts and massive loopholes and lack of enforcement to pay nothing in taxes. I think what would really help small businesses compete on a level playing field is if corporations were required to actually pay the taxes that they owe and were taxed, for example, on the profits that they shift into offshore tax havens at the same rate as businesses here in the U.S. are taxed on their profits from actually, you know, creating things here in the United States.
Again, a point of emphasis here, because I've heard this from callers, I've heard this from conservative friends of mine. Most small businesses, if they incorporate, tend to be LLCs. Those are pass-through entities, which basically mean you're getting taxed like an individual. These are smaller businesses. The vast majority of corporate tax is paid by massive S and C corps. And these are the sorts of corporations that engage in this gamesmanship where they expatriate, fancy words here, move profits offshore to escape their tax responsibilities here. Again, is it going to hurt? And why is there this fear mongering? Why do Republicans continue to talk about and try to scare small business owners when the reality is the small business owners, just like the rest of the middle class, are being harmed by the constant reduction of corporate tax rates that we've seen put in place by Donald Trump and his cronies in Congress?
I mean, the fear mongering is because massive tax breaks for the very wealthiest and the largest multinational corporations are really, really unpopular. Mm-hmm. And you see that in polling, you see that in people's reactions. I mean, frankly, you see that in the way that today in his speech, Trump didn't really want to emphasize exactly how far he was going to cut the corporate tax rate. That does not play as well as some of the other things he likes to say. And unfortunately, organizations like the Chamber of Commerce and a lot of anti-tax groups are dominated by folks who are really just looking out for the profit margins of like ExxonMobil and Microsoft and really, really large corporations and how they can cheat on their taxes. And so I think it's not surprising that given the dominance of those big, wealthy, powerful players, that folks are getting a lot of misinformation.
Yeah, when you can't, there's an old saying in the law, when you don't have the facts, you pound the law. When you don't have the law, you pound the facts. And if you don't have the facts or the law, you pound the table. The political version of that is if you don't have actual facts or analysis to pick up your arguments, you just lie about it and hope that people buy it. But there's a really potentially disastrous consequence that keeps becoming potentially more likely, or I should simply say more likely. And that is, frankly, increased destabilization of our democracy because of a shrinking middle class and people that feel like they cannot get ahead. Is there a linkage between how little we're taxing these richest, most consistently largest, consistently profitable and largest corporations in the United States, and how much wealth the ultra and ultra, ultra rich are hoarding, which leads them to impact our politics and policies more than any one of us with a single vote can?
Absolutely. And you see that everywhere from the workplace to the effect that Citizens United had on campaign finance and sort of blowing the doors off of the ability of the very, very wealthy to spend basically unlimited amounts of money supporting candidates that have their interests at heart. And it's also just been really bad for our economy and for the functioning of our government. You know, one of the big problems with the tax cuts of the last 40 years, you know, starting with Reagan, we clawed a lot of that back during the Clinton administration, but then the Bush tax cuts, their extension, then the Trump tax cuts in 2017, they've left us with a government that doesn't provide anything like the kinds of services that other rich country citizens just grow to expect. You know, I have conversations with folks in Canada asking if an IT job in the US would pay a little bit more than where they are. And you start to explain, well, but you have to pay for your own health insurance, and that health insurance doesn't even cover everything. And you have to pay for your own childcare. And, you know, our retirement system is private. You have to contribute yourself to that.
And they stay in Canada.
Yeah, they start to realize the costs. You know, we hear these plans to, you know, allegedly help workers by cutting taxes, but they're paying for it on the back end.
That's my very special guest, Kitty Richards, Senior Strategic Advisor at Groundwork Collaborative, talking about how we actually get the middle class ahead and the tax fight for 2025. More with Kitty when we come back, including, frankly, these corporations admitting that they're price gouging and putting their hands into your pockets. I'm Maggie Dawn. It is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Grab me some of that big fat money.
Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Because we are in the 3 to 3:30 time slot, it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My guest today has been Kitty Richards, the Senior Strategic Advisor at Groundwork Collaborative. She's worked for the U.S. Treasury and the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute. She testified this month before the Senate Banking Economic Subcommittee on the need to reform our tax code to make sure that it actually is fair. And by fair, I mean that it works to ensure a thriving middle class. When I say middle class, I mean basically anybody that gets a paycheck, anybody that's got a net worth south of $30 million. So even if you got a couple, $2-3 million in the bank, I'm not even talking about you. Actual middle class folks, that's what we're talking about. That's what democracy needs. And by the way, that's what capitalism needs, because the middle class is the one that consumes all the stuff that the businesses make. Kitty, before our break, we queued up the fact that businesses actually talk about the fact that they are keeping prices artificially high and pocketing the profits, not paying their workers more with the profits, not contributing their fair share to our infrastructure by which they transport their goods and goods around the country, not investing in capital improvements for their business, not using those profits for research and development. And indeed, just an hour ago, the U.S. Department of Justice announced a lawsuit against Visa for artificially stifling competition in the debit card market to drive up profits even more. This is happening across all sectors. Talk to me a little bit, Kitty, about the fact that this is out in the open. They talk about this on earnings calls.
That's something that Groundwork has worked a lot on. And we actually had someone listening in on earnings calls, especially during the post-pandemic inflationary period. And yeah, you hear CEOs, and look, they're in it to make a buck. And they're describing how they're going to do that and how they are going to provide shareholders with profits. And the way they're going to do that is any chance they have to jack up prices and depress wages and hand the money over to shareholders, they're going to take it. And they confess to it on their earnings calls. And I think it's important to understand here that the pandemic created a lot of opportunity for this behavior. Mm. And corporations, understandably, took advantage of that opportunity. But what we also saw was collusive behavior and just taking cover under the fact that, you know, ordinary people were sort of looking around and seeing prices go up. And so any individual company could kind of signal to their potential competitors that they were going to raise prices and then raise them and see if other people followed suit. And it really created a spiral. And, you know, a lot of folks were blaming workers for inflation, saying that unemployment was going to have to go way up to bring inflation down to avoid a wage price spiral. Mm-hmm. We never saw anything like that.
Right.
What we saw was a profit price spiral.
Yeah. I feel, Kitty, and I'm an economist by academic training, not practice, but we used to hear when I was back in graduate school, we used to hear about this wage price spiral. And by the way, folks, what Kitty and I are referring to is where prices are going up because wages are going up, and that all has this sort of catapulting impact on inflation, and it can get really out of hand very quickly. Of course, the reason that this period felt so terrible for everybody with a net worth, you know, south of $30 million is in part because we didn't see the wage floor go up. So you just had prices going up. But again, corporations were pocketing those profits or giving them away to CEOs in massive pay packages or their largest billionaire shareholders like Rupert Murdoch, et cetera, and Warren Buffett, and stock buybacks, which are just cash giveaways to massively wealthy people. And we weren't seeing those wages grow up. So we didn't see that spiraling. And they talk about this stuff on the earnings call. I've got a term for it. Kitty, I hope you use it. I call it pandemic profiteering. We talked about war profiteering back in the wakes of both World War I and World War II. That is exactly what we saw here. We've also heard a ton about Project 2025. And I talk about it a lot in terms of various policies, especially as they relate to things like, for example, women's healthcare. But Project 2025 has a bit to say about tax, and you know a little bit about what that might mean for the middle class. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of wild tax plans thrown out there, including Trump's plan to slash the corporate rate yet again, and provide even more tax cuts to the wealthy. But Project 2025 is really quite extreme, even by those standards. And what you find when you look under the hood is that their complete overhaul of the individual income tax would end up raising taxes on the typical family of four by something like $3,000 a year, while giving literally millions of dollars a year in tax cuts to the wealthiest taxpayers. So it's really blowing the doors off of the the just march toward ever larger tax cuts for the wealthy. And, you know, these tax cuts would come directly at the expense of low and middle income people, both in the taxes that they would have to pay and in cuts to the services that they rely on, like education for their children.
A real basic example that I sometimes cite is this. If you go to a public park, it likely means that you don't have acres of playfields in your backyard because you are extraordinarily wealthy. And public parks are not mandated services by local governments. And if we starve government, it is usually the middle class that ends up paying the price, because our parks, as well as the essential services that we all rely upon, end up being cut while the billionaire and millionaire class gets wealthier. Thank you so much, Kitty Richards. She's the Senior Strategic Advisor at Groundwork Collaborative. I really appreciate your time. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by producer Jess's dad. I'm so excited. His name is Neil Plotkin. He was a glutton for punishment, ran against Alberta Darling back in the 2020 legislative race. We'll have more with Neil after these brief messages and your farm update here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Oh, what is up, Wisconsin? Welcome back if you're joining us again. Welcome. If you're just tuning in, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just finished up another great episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. You can find all of those past episodes at civicmedia.us. And we will be here every day talking about money and tax policy and how to actually make our economy work for the middle class. Before I bring on my very special next guest, this caller has been very patient. Billy from Madison, thank you for waiting. You had a comment or question.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to make an analogy between business and football. You know, a few decades ago, the highlight reels were filled with defensive plays of hard hits that today would be called dirty hits. And, you know, for the last several decades, practices that people have been celebrated for being smart businessmen, avoiding taxes, tax buybacks, stock buybacks, things like that. I hope as we change the rules, we're able to call those things what they really are and change the vocabulary around them. It's not smart businessmen. It's lack of ethics. It's sometimes even criminal. It is certainly meant to confuse and disorient consumers and things like that. So I hope we can change the vocabulary around some of those business practices to reflect the bad practices that have been celebrated for too long.
Yeah, I wish we would stop lauding corporations and the ultra wealthy that don't pay their fair share, that figure out how to cheat their taxes with a phalanx of lawyers and accountants and twist our tax code beyond all recognition. And every time a billionaire or millionaire or enormously profitable large corporation does that, that means your tax burden as a wage earning middle class person goes up. With that, thank you so much. I want to bring on my very special next guest, special for so many reasons. His name is Neil Plotkin. He ran for State Senate District 8 in 2020 against former Assemblyperson Alberta Darling. I call her the female Darth Vader. And he did so despite the fact that Wisconsin, after the 2010 census, had gerrymandered our maps beyond any and all recognition. He did this despite the fact that he was campaigning and running during the enormous challenges of the onset and then the continuation of the COVID-19 pandemic. And Neil came so very close to beating the female Darth Vader within single digits. Neil was a small business owner for nearly 3 decades, plaque in sales and marketing. And he has been a substitute teacher, giving of his expertise and knowledge to the students of Nicolet High School, which is the public high school in Glendale, where his 3 children attended. One of them, Jess, is our producer today. Hi. So Jess gets to say hello to her dad, and I get to welcome Neil. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. Glad to have a chance to see your spacious and luxurious studios
here. Oh, and with a dose of sarcasm to boot, you didn't tell me you was a comedian as well, Jess.
Where do you think I got it from?
Sometimes people just have those innate gifts,
I suppose.
I'll just start, Neil, by saying it's a pleasure to work with your daughter every day. She's been a great asset to Civic Media, and I appreciate the heck out of her.
No surprise.
No surprise, indeed. Let's jump in. Why did you put yourself through this trial, if one can call it that, in running against Alberta Darling in 2020 when the maps were so unfair?
Okay. Well, first of all, knowing that we had a daunting challenge, we actually started the campaign in 2019. Mm. So it was before the onset of the pandemic. So,
because you had your work cut out for you, you got to get
right.
started early.
So that was just another gift.
Yes.
But the reason for me and the initial and one of the number one driving things that made me decide to run was because in a democracy we must have choices.
Yeah.
And for 2 consecutive cycles in the 2012 election and in the 2016 elections for Wisconsin Senate District 8, Alberta Darling ran unopposed. And that is an affront to democracy.
Yeah, one of the things, Neil, that I've talked about a lot on the show is that gerrymandering, by its very nature, what it does is it makes districts from which we elect representatives far more extreme, and it dissuades opposing candidates from running.
Absolutely.
And when you've got more extreme candidates and you've got lower incentives for people to challenge incumbents, what you end up with is more extreme policy, right? And it ends up robbing everybody. And I'd like to think Wisconsinites are more independent-minded, middle-of-the-road folks, despite, you know, all of the hubbub that we hear. And it gives, it deprives us when we happen to live in these grossly gerrymandered districts of the ability to require our elected officials to compromise and actually get stuff done because they don't have to win election. So bravo, Neil, for running in 2020, keeping Alberta Darling honest, as it were.
Well, we tried to do that. And realistically, argumentatively, and not trying to wave our flag too much.
Oh, no, wave away, Neil. Wave away.
No, wave that flag.
Wave. You were doing the good works.
Yeah. We took a district where it was so gerrymandered that nobody even bothered to run in 2012 and 2016. And we got close to 46% of the vote. And that was a huge shift. We have the numbers. I kept the numbers. And
tell us exactly what the numbers were.
Okay. Well, realistically and argumentatively, we flipped Wisconsin from 2016 to 2020. The numbers were we got just under 55,000 votes. So Senate District number 8 had one of the highest turnouts.
Yes.
In the 2020 state elections in Wisconsin. We actually did at one point had set a state record.
Wow.
For a state Senate campaign. Mm. With the funding that we got from donors and from support from the state Democratic Party. For a few weeks, we held history.
Yeah.
That we were top just a little bit at the end by Brad Pfaff, who ran in Western Wisconsin in SD32. And he won his district by 600 votes. So that's how close it was. But
one of the things that you're touching upon, Neil, is when we have candidates in competitive elections, when we've got competitively drawn districts, more people turn out. Gee whiz, go figure. And when more people turn out, that means that more voices are heard in elections, right? And in 2020, your work in SD8, I think, was essential to a whole bunch of big wins for Democrats, including the energy that was behind Governor Evers. All sorts of good things happened because of those efforts that you made in SD8. Those are some of the things I think you accomplished. You've been listing some of these statistical gains. The interesting thing to me, Neil, is that when we look at this in the context of what's going on in this cycle, what we've seen is these districts that used to be extremely red. And I'm not just talking about the gerrymandering. I'm just talking about historically the voting trends.
Yes.
We've seen many of these formerly red areas turning purple and many now starting to look a little bit more blue than purple. Folks like yourself, we have to thank for that. When you look at this 2024 election, Neil, I'm pretty encouraged. Even in Ozaukee and Waukesha counties, we're seeing this movement. Where do you place yourself in that sort of arc, that trajectory in turning these formerly very traditionally Republican districts and areas into more purple areas?
Well, first of all, we did so well in the election that after the election in 2021, when the Republicans initially redistricted all the districts,
yep,
I got moved out of my district. I know.
Yeah, they made a block.
Yeah, they made sure to be sure that Neil could never run again.
I'm no longer in SD8. Glendale was a community that was split between the 10th and the 8th district. Mm-hmm. Now all of Glendale is in the 10th district. So at least I picked up a couple of Democratic representatives, but. We made a difference, and I said argumentatively, we helped flip the state. In 2016, when there was no candidate in the district, Donald Trump won Wisconsin by about 22,000 votes.
Yep.
In 2020, when we ran and got just under 55,000 votes, Joe Biden won the state of Wisconsin by about 20,000 votes. And information I have from America Votes shows that in the 8th Senate District, the shift in votes from Republican to Democrat in 2020 was 141%.
Wow.
No other district came even close. Even Brad's district up in 32.
So what you're telling me, Neil, is that you basically saved democracy in 2020.
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. Basically. Well, and without Wisconsin, none of this happens. Well, listen, folks, my very special guest this segment is Mr. Neil Plotkin, not just dad of our fabulous producer, Jess, but also the Senate candidate in District 8 for 2020 that lost by just a whisker, as the MAGA president finally admitted he lost in 2020. You also had the challenge, Neil, of running during COVID. What was that like? How did it change your campaign?
It changed it a lot. As I said, we started the campaign in late 2019. I wanted to get out. One of the reasons was I wanted to try to avoid a primary.
Yes.
Because I wanted people to see that there was a solid candidate in the district. So I originally was working with with one of the campaign coordinating groups. And by the way, one of the big changes in Wisconsin truly is the leadership that Ben Wickler has brought to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin compared to the previous leadership.
Yeah.
He turned things around completely.
Ben's done a fantastic job.
He is a huge reason for the change in what happened here.
About a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you about being a substitute teacher. I have a number of friends who are teachers. It is a hard job, to say the least. What brought you, why did you decide to become a sub after owning a small business for 30 plus years?
Well, I was in the business world total over 40 years.
Yeah.
About 25 to 30 years as either an owner or partner.
Yeah.
And the business world was changing a lot. I had some very good years in the business world and did a lot of very interesting, exciting things. But I could see that my business world was changing dramatically. Most of my customers are gone.
Yes.
There were major retailers, and all you have to do is look at the retailer graveyard.
Yes.
Those were people who helped support me. Actually, your producer's sister recommended to me that I teach. And I had I had all of the credits available to do that, and just needed to talk to a couple of my friends who I know who had did that. There are a number of substitute teachers at Nicolet, and I'm sure at a lot of other schools that spent their careers doing something else. Besides teaching. And I think that that brings a special ingredient to the school and to the students.
Well, I thank you for your service. Mr. Plotkin, what do you teach when you sub, or do you do anything and everything?
Most substitute teachers will take just about any assignment. There's some
that's
I really like.
That's how it works.
My degrees are in political science and American history, so that's where I like to be. But I also, I really enjoy teaching English and other subjects. There's some things that are
well, thank you
others.
So much. I got to jump here. Thank you, okay. Neil, for your work in 2020 and for taking a shot at it here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with some final thoughts after these important messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You got Dom Salvia coming up next. I might be sticking around for a little chit chat with Dom because, you know, he needs a little feminine energy. Little feminine energy. Jess usually holds it down. And what fun, Jess, to talk with your dad last segment.
Oh my goodness, he's gonna be talking about this forever.
He's adorable.
I
can
know.
I call your dad adorable?
Of course you can.
Oh my God, what a nice man.
I know. I lucked out. Yeah. I lucked all the way out.
From one daughter to another that lucked out with really nice dads, it makes all the difference in the world. He actually reminded me a little bit of my dad.
Yeah.
He got going there.
Yeah.
He got going. We'll have Neil back. It'll get easier the next time.
Oh, yeah.
Dom Salvia coming up at the top of the hour. He is going to be dropping the word of the hour on y'all. That means if you text that word via the Civic Media app during Dom's 4 o'clock hour, you're going to be entered to win in the 4 o'clock hour. We give away one prize in these hours. You're going to be entered to win either $100 or some gold jewelry, which is really cool. I have a penchant for the gold. I was strictly silver through most of high school and most of college.
What changed?
I don't know. I think the silver was kind of where my jam was with my Birkenstock wearing kind of vibe. And then I think I wanted something different. So I got into the gold. I know I have a small problem. Yeah, you're going to win $100 or some gold jewelry when you text that secret code word to win in the 4 o'clock hour during Dom Salvia's show. And that text will also enter you to win a pair of tickets to see your Green Bay favorite team with the Pigskin on December 23rd. They'll be playing New Orleans at the Frozen Tundra. It's going to be good fun. Bring your mittens, everybody. But it's not going to be that cold because you'll be in the club level, folks. Again, that word dropping during the 4 o'clock hour. It is the last week in this Civic Media statewide text to win. Go for the green or gold contest. So don't miss that. But I caught this article just as I was driving in today. And I thought, for real? Ugh.
Oh, good. All right. Lay it on me.
Okay. So this is Dan Bice, who's been dropping some knowledge bombs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Recently. Like, go Dan. Sometimes I draw a little objection with you about some of the nitpicky stuff that you put out there. But these are legitimately important stories. He broke the story, of course, about Hovde and the $26 million from the cartel allegedly affiliated bank. Yesterday, Dan Bice breaking this. A New York Post campaign reporter. So a New York Post, I'm going to put air quotes around journalist. Okay. Was actually a paid consultant for the Wisconsin GOP.
Huh.
So, point of fact. Yes, I'm sure if you've listened to me before, you will recognize that I am a Dem. I am a Dem. I don't actually.
What?
I don't actually belong to the Democratic Party. I don't.
Oh,
think
you're not a card carrying.
No, I have never. Nope. I've been a card carrying ACLU member.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I've been a card carrying NAACP member. I've been a card carrying Human Rights Campaign member, but I've never actually signed up to be a member of a political party. But despite that, so I've never been paid to do any kind of consulting or anything. These are just my opinions. I also don't consider myself a journalist in the traditional sense. I do entertainment commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one could make an argument that the New York Post is basically like a gossip rag.
Right.
But they have broken real news.
Occasionally.
They put themselves out there as if they do real journalism. And that means that readers don't assume that their, quote, journalists have been paid by a political party for campaign activity or consulting. So, again, thank you, Dan Bice. Turns out that, quote, journalist, air quotes here, Amy Sikma was paid twice last year by the state Republican Party for consulting work. She was also a campaign consultant for former Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly's 2023 campaign, previously ran a primary contest for a GOP candidate, and worked for an organization that opposes same-sex marriage. And she has been, since June, working for the New York Post and covering presidential, Senate, and congressional races in Wisconsin. And nothing, nothing in her byline or on her profile for the Post discloses any of these ties. Now, I don't think you need to be a lawyer to be able to identify this as what they would call ye olde conflict of interest.
But you are a lawyer.
So I will call it a conflict of interest. And of course, almost, I think everything that she's written has been critical of Democratic candidates.
Well, of course it has.
Of course it has, because she is a bought and paid for GOP operative now posing as a journalist for the Rupert Murdoch-owned Fox News lying entities that are that conglomerate called the New York Post. Shame on you, Amy. Shame on you, Rupert Murdoch. Shame on you, New York Post. Readers deserve better. But you always know what you're going to get here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Because I call him like I see him every day. And I always like to end the show with this because I truly believe it. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together. The Dom Salvia Show is coming up next. I may be sticking around. A couple of women's issues to talk about. We'll be back with more on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.